Will the clerk please call the next case?
The fourth would call PNC Investment Company LLC versus Fiona Stedler LP et al. The mansion court, Mr. James Lookout, to argue for the appellant, and Mr. Gregory Zimmer to argue for the appellant.
You may proceed. Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the Court. I'm James Bookout, and I represent appellant PNC Investment Company, LLC, which I will refer to as PNCIC for short. This appeal arises, as the Court is aware, from a lawsuit brought by Frank Zaccanelli, Jr. and two of his entities under his control, which I will collectively refer to as the Zaccanelli parties, against numerous defendants involved in the renovation of the historic Statler Hotel in downtown Dallas. Now, of course, this appeal, however, only involves PNCIC's motion to dismiss under the Texas Citizens Participation Act. This is precisely the type of case that the Texas legislature had in mind when it passed the TCPA into law. This is a case that was brought in harassment and retaliation to inflict economic pain on PNCIC for the exercise of its right of association and the exercise of its right of free speech as defined under the TCPA in order to pressure PNCIC to find a way to buy Mr. Zaccanelli out of the project after he got into Crossways and was dismissed as the omnibus property manager on the project by Murdad Moyeti, who is the developer on the project. Those are the main parties in the case. As the Court is aware from the record and the briefs, PNCIC is merely an investor in a master tenant entity in the project, which is really just a conduit for capital to flow into the redevelopment. And you can see that PNCIC, before this case was filed, was threatened with this litigation at Clerk's Record 3583 by Mr. Ziegler, actually. And so this is precisely the type of harassing action that the TCPA was intended to stop early in the case. So as an initial matter, obviously, to shift the burden to prove a prima facie case to the Zaccanelli parties, PNCIC was required to show by a preponderance of the evidence that the TCPA applies to this case. As the Texas Supreme Court stated in Hirsch versus Tatum, I'd like to read the quote, when it is clear from the plaintiff's pleadings that the action is covered by the act, the defendant needs show no more. So the question before the court, the court's inquiry, because it is a de novo appeal, is does the Seventh Amendment petition, which was the latest petition filed before the motion was heard, does it make allegations about covered communications under the act? Whether the communications occurred, which the Zaccanelli parties spend a very large amount of time briefing, whether they actually occurred is wholly irrelevant. The Supreme Court addressed that very clearly in Hirsch versus Tatum and very explicitly. Now, there are many problems. In particular, they rely on some testimony about whether the communications happened from PNCIC's corporate representative, Ms. Holly Jacoby, and that deposition's in the record. But that's, again, it's not the inquiry. All that matters is that PNCIC has demonstrated that the Seventh Amendment petition alleges communications that are covered by the TCPA. Now, as to the first is the exercise of the right of association under the TCPA. The TCPA says we have to prove, by a preponderance of the evidence, that it is based on, relates to, or is in response to an exercise of the right of association. Very broad language, as the Court is very aware. Obviously, there's many cases on how broad that language is, and many from the Texas Supreme Court itself. The exercise of the right of association, of course, is the statute was in effect when this motion was filed, was defined as a communication between individuals who joined together to collectively express, promote, pursue, or defend common interests. The Seventh Amendment petition is replete with allegations and complaints regarding communications that PNCIC allegedly had with other defendants or particularly with the developer. In fact, PNCIC counted at least 60 locations in the Seventh Amendment petition where these allegations exist, and you can see a highlighted copy of those at Clerk's Record, Volume 6, pages 4340 through 4399. So those alleged communications, they concern the redevelopment of a historic hotel in downtown Dallas. This hotel is in a special district that allows for tax-incentivized financing. Why did PNCIC invest in this project? PNCIC does not make any meaningful returns in terms of ordinary cash flow for from this project. Its main return comes in the form of federal historic tax credits. So it's actually publicly financed federal historic tax credits that are providing the main financing for this project and the main return for PNCIC. Like any other investor, PNCIC would not have invested in this without the public financing that was available. In addition, the project is also financed by state historic tax credits and EB-5 lending. That's the EB-5 visa program that the federal government runs to encourage investment in the United States. Mostly huge amounts of tens of millions of dollars of public money supposed to go for the public benefit to redevelop a dilapidated, decrepit eyesore on the Dallas skyline. It's the public that's paying for this project. That's what those communications are about. The alleged communications are the historic redevelopment and the supposed massive fraud to bilk the taxpayers out of $100 million. There's no evidence for that, but that's the allegation. And the 7th Amendment petition couldn't be clearer that the Statler project is at the heart of all of PNC's alleged communications, and therefore this lawsuit was brought in response to those alleged communications, and PNCIC has established an exercise of the right of association as defined in the TCPA. Additionally, PNCIC established an exercise of the right of free speech, which is defined as a communication made in connection with a matter of public concern. Matter of public concern includes matters related to environmental, economic, or community well-being, or a good product or service in the marketplace, or the government. Just as with the right of association, the same communications about supposedly a massive $100 million fraud to fraudulently increase the budget and bilk the taxpayers out of huge amounts of money, the public, the government, out of huge amounts of money, those are matters of public concern. Certainly the redevelopment of the Statler project is a matter of public concern.
Would you say that the TCPA would apply in the absence of any involvement of taxpayer money or federal funding?
It could, Your Honor, but those aren't the facts under this case. Obviously, in this case, it's very much the Zach and Lily Party's allegation that the importance, the gravitas of this case is what the massive collection of defendants supposedly conspired to do to misappropriate public funds. And so the right of free speech, all that we have to show is that the communications were made in connection with a matter of public concern. The communications alleged in the 7th Amendment petition are more than sufficient to satisfy that standard. And so because the allegations in the 7th Amendment petition are based on those alleged communications, almost exclusively on those alleged communications by PNCIC, it was in response to PNCIC's exercise of the right of free speech as broadly defined under the TCPA. Now, the Zach and Ellie Party spend most of their briefing, they don't really argue those points very much. They spend most of their briefing arguing that the commercial speech exemption applies. I know the court's familiar with that, but the commercial speech exemption, first, the burden falls on the Zach and Ellie parties to prove that the exemption applies. There's clear case on that, including in Schmidt versus Crawford, a case out of the Houston First District Court of Appeals on August 20th, 2019. And as the court is aware, the Texas Supreme Court has held that requires the application of four elements. Certainly, the most important in this case is the first element, that the defendant was primarily engaged in the business of selling or leasing goods or services. It is incontrovertible that PNCIC was not engaged in the sale of goods or services in this case. PNCIC is an investor. Its name is PNC Investment Company. That's why all it does is invest in these historic redevelopment projects in exchange for public tax credits financed by the government. In this case, that's what it did. It invested funds into the project in the master tenant, which is how the capital got into the project, in exchange for historic tax credits. That's it. Now,
do you have a case that says investments are not a service to someone?
I don't have a case that says investments are not a service, but certainly the purpose.
Or investing is not a service.
I don't have a specific case on that under the TCPA, Your Honor. What I would say for sure is I think we can tell that the reason an investment is made is to make a return that comes from that investment. It's not something, you're not compensated by the person to whom you're making an investment in exchange
for
having performed physical.
So what you're saying is the motivation behind an investment is your own self-interest.
Right, exactly, Your Honor.
You're not serving someone else, you're lining your own pockets.
Exactly, Your Honor. For instance, the Zach and Ellie parties point to a very small amendment fee that the developer was required to pay. Basically, when the budget increased, PNCIC was asked to make a second tranche of investment funds equity into the project. It undertook due diligence. Due diligence is expensive, so when you have to do it a second time, that's an expensive undertaking.
But even though your motivation may be your own self-interest, the profit, aren't you performing a service to those who need that investment in order to move forward with their project?
No, Your Honor. You don't. When you make an investment in a company, if I go buy, for instance, I go buy equity on the stock market, I don't get invoices from the company. I don't send invoices to the company. Nothing like that happens. In fact, I don't even have a guaranteed return on my investment. The only return I'm going to get is if my investment, the company I'm investing in, or in this case the Statler project, performs well and adequately in order to cover costs and leave money left over. So that's an investment is not at all like a service where I expect payment even if the services may not have benefited you in your view. For instance, when a lawyer defends someone in a case that they lose, the lawyer still expects payment for the services, for example, correct? I don't get paid as an investor if the project doesn't succeed or, you know, the company becomes insolvent. That's a risk that I take on. So the investment really is, as the court pointed out, for your own self-interest, and that's the basis, the distinction between an investment and the rendering of a service for a fee. And so, so in conclusion on the commercial speech exemption, the Zach and Ellie parties have failed to establish that the commercial speech exemption applies. They failed to show that PNCIC was primarily engaged in the business of selling or leasing goods or services. They've certainly not shown that PNCIC's statements arose out of the sale of a good or service. And under the four Castleman factors, which are very narrow, this doesn't apply. In fact, the commercial speech exemption probably primarily applies when a business makes a statement about, say, a competitor's product, for example. A good example is if, say, Apple made some extremely negative statement about Microsoft Windows, saying Microsoft Windows will give you viruses, it's inevitable, it's a trash piece of software that'll ruin your computer, you know, very flagrantly disparaging statements. You can't use the TCPA to get out of that business disparagement claim because of the commercial speech exemption. That's what the Castleman factors, the Castleman elements apply to. That's the prototypical commercial speech exemption case. And so because the PNCIC has established that the TCPA applies by a preponderance of the evidence and they can't establish that the commercial speech exemption applies, the burden, of course, shifts to them to demonstrate a prima facie case by clear and specific evidence. They have abjectly failed to do so. Now, they've alleged numerous kitchen sink causes of action against PNCIC because they don't really have one, so they tried to allege a lot of them. But as to all those causes of action, their so-called evidence has the same problem. The only evidence they've submitted in the trial court and in the record in support of their causes of action is their Seventh Amendment petition, which is unverified, of course, and then the declaration of Frank Zaccanelli Jr., which frankly, largely just copies verbatim statements directly out of the Seventh Amendment petition. Those documents are wholly insufficient to meet the standard required by the TCPA. Clear and specific evidence means who, what, when, where, why. Give me facts about who did what and when. There is not a single allegation in either of those documents or anywhere in the record that PNCIC took any specific action whatsoever. There's no allegation that Mr. Smith, or Ms. Jacoby in this case, did something on behalf of PNCIC at this time or said it to this person and this caused X, Y, and Z to occur. All that they have are incredibly conclusory and allegations and threadbare recitations of the elements of the claims and the cause of action at issue. For instance, Mr. Zaccanelli's declaration repeatedly says, that he, based on his review of unspecified documents, I have concluded that PNCIC committed fraud. Or based on my review of my experience in the industry, again, how that's relevant, I'm not sure. But based on my experience in the industry, PNCIC must have aided and abetted fraud or aided and abetted a breach of fiduciary duty. Those types of allegations are just simply insufficient to meet the standard required by the TCPA. And so, in conclusion, I'll save the rest for my rebuttal, But in conclusion, the trial court erred. It didn't give us a reason. It just dismissed. It just denied the motion to dismiss. But the trial court erred in failing to grant the TCPA motion to dismiss. And this court, after de novo review, should grant it and dismiss the Zaccanelli party's claims with prejudice. Thank you.
The trial court did not err in denying the TCPA motion for two reasons. Number one, there were no communications that served as the basis for FIAMA's claims against PNC.
How can you have a fraudulent misrepresentation without a statement?
Absolutely can, Judge. You absolutely can. You have a fraudulent misrepresentation by conduct that amounts to concealment. If you see, for example, the allegation that I made, the FIAMA parties made against Jeffries in the hearing we just finished, there it is alleged that it is the conduct of Jeffries by failing to reveal, in other words, by concealment, by deceitful concealment, not disclosure. That conduct is not a communication. And that type of reasoning harkens back.
And what's the who, what, when, where on the fraudulent concealment? Where's the evidence of that?
The evidence of that would be found in the depositions of Holly Jacoby. And Ms. Jacoby's deposition makes clear all of the elements of all of the causes of action were hit in Ms. Jacoby's deposition, as well as the establishment of the commercial speech exception to exemption to the TCPA. That deposition is starting with the very first question: what is the business of PNCIC? And that answer is to provide real estate asset management and investment services. In fact, in the exhibits to Ms. Jacoby's deposition.
Who are they providing those services to, FIAMA or their investors?
They're providing those services to the, in this case, that would be those they are trying to help, which is the Centurion American defendants, which Moyetti defendants, which would include the company that my client owns 25% of, 1914 Commerce GM, Inc. But with respect to service and with respect to the audience is that element of the commercial speech exemption, it is not that the services have to be rendered to the claimant or that the benefit or customer is the claimant. There has to be conduct. It doesn't have to be communication. It can be conduct. Conduct that is directed at the audience that is typically the audience of the service provider here, PNCIC, and that is the developer of a project who is looking for immediate cash to help the investment. And here the developer is, in its simplest form, going to PNCIC for help to convert federal historic tax credit subsidies into immediate cash by PNCIC paying cash for those historic tax credits, federal historic tax credits, and then PNCIC managing the project. Because PNCIC, they are who they are. It's PNC Bank. No one, we all know who they are, and Ms. Jacoby admits that's who they are. They're a subsidiary of PNC Bank of Pittsburgh. PNCIC's business, as stated on their website, as stated in their advertisements, all of which are exhibits to Ms. Jacoby's deposition, is to render real estate investment and asset management services. They use their own words, services. Ms. Jacoby's own words, services. They're in the business of rendering a service. They advertise that. So it is not just an investment. They render investment services by way of doing this. The Statler development had federal historic tax credits that were issued by the Parks Department. U.S. Parks Department. The developer, Centurion Defendants, wanted to convert those federal historic tax credits to immediate cash to add to the funding of the construction. In particular, the increase in the budget of $100 million so that Mr. Moretti could pocket the difference. That's the underlying basis of this entire lawsuit, is that the project increased in budget but did not increase in quality of materials.
I get that you think they did some very bad things.
Yes, Judge.
But that's really not the what we're here to decide. We're here to decide whether or not TCPA applies.
Absolutely.
Whether you met your burden if it does.
Right. So it's...
I keep hearing you harken back to this, but it's really, for our analysis in this case, quite irrelevant.
I understand, and I agree, and I agree. And I would point out these two things. Number one, this lawsuit is like the lawsuit in the Crestview case. You were on that panel, Justice Sutter, I believe, or it may have been Justice Gabriel. I apologize. Apparently it was Justice Gabriel. I'm getting my cases mixed up. But be that as it may, the Crestview case, which is the most recent Fort Worth Court of Appeals case on TCPA, of course, reverses the trial court's granting of the TCPA motion, and on the grounds that the allegations in the lawsuit were of conduct, not of communication. And that's precisely what my clients have alleged. In the court's record at page 2021, FIAMMA specifically alleges the conduct that serves as the underlying basis for the fraudulent misrepresentations are as follows. And the conduct is enumerated there as failing to do, making a decision. The underlying conduct is PNCIC, in exchange for its, as part and parcel of its services, PNCIC imposes what's called a master tenant operating agreement. It's basically a playbook for how PNCIC wants this project to be run. It provides PNCIC with obligations and rights, including whether or not my client can be terminated from his position as the omnibus property manager of the project. By the way, my client was appointed to that position by PNCIC as part of its operating agreement. The operating agreement is an exhibit to Ms. Jacoby's deposition. I went through the operating agreement ad nauseum with Ms. Jacoby in her deposition in detail. And what does this mean? What obligations are there of PNCIC? What are your rights? One of the impositions in the operating agreement that PNCIC required was that an omnibus property manager who was not the developer, in other words, not Mr. Moretti, serve as the manager of the project, the overseeing the project, in other words, the safety net, the oversight, so to speak. And the contract that my client signed is a form contract that PNCIC uses in all of its projects in which it renders these asset management and investment services. So we're talking about conduct, and in that conduct, PNCIC, for example, requires for my client to be terminated as omnibus property manager in accordance with that contract. Cause, notice of the cause, opportunity to cure, and for a passage of time before termination can occur. And as is stated in the record in Ms. Jacoby's deposition, none of that happened. My client was terminated as omnibus property manager with a one-page, one short paragraph letter. You're terminated. Please leave the premises. If you appear, you will be arrested. So,
and who did that? Who terminated?
That would be 1914 Commerce Leasing.
And how is PNC involved in that?
They are 99% owner of that entity.
But they're a separate entity.
They are that entity. PNCIC is its own entity, but it is a 99% owner of the entity that fired or terminated wrongfully my client from the position that PNCIC appointed my client to be. And in the operating agreement PNCIC itself drafted, PNCIC requires that the developer obtain the approval of PNCIC before terminating my client from that position. PNCIC made a decision to allow that termination to occur, despite the fact that the termination did not comply with PNCIC's own contract, that PNCIC was not going to enforce the provisions of its own operating agreement on which my client is relying, but the conduct of PNCIC is that is at issue. It is not communication. It's not speech. It's certainly not free speech. It's certainly not association. It is a decision-making process. PNCIC decided not to withhold its consent to the termination of the FIAMA entity as omnibus property manager. PNCIC decided not to withhold its consent to the increase in the budget by $100 million despite the whole lack of support for such a budget increase. PNCIC decided not to withhold consent for the sale of the TIF, $41 million of the $46 million TIF asset that was based on a fraudulent, manufactured budget increase. The whole purpose for selling the TIF was supposedly to fund the increase in cost of construction due to an upgrade of the hotel. That never happened. That money never went to the project. It went to the developer. But PNCIC had the right, per Ms. Jacoby's own deposition testimony, PNCIC could have stopped all of that. They had the right, and we continue.
Did they have the obligation?
Okay, well, I believe they had the obligation.
Why do you say that?
Because the contract itself outlines what their obligations are, and one of those is enforcing their own agreement. However, FIAMA submits to the court that it need not be an obligation. And I know that's going to sound strange. Well, from an obligation derives a duty, right? And that's where we get duties. Well, PNCIC had the right, at least, to stop all of these things. They saw them happening, and they had the ability to prevent them from happening, and they chose not to do it. That is conduct that is deceitful. That is conduct that is fraudulent. It need not be a representation by speech or communication. It is conduct in that they made a decision. I can stop this. I see that he has no basis for a $100 million budget increase. However, we as PNCIC, we are just providing a service. We are not an investor. We do not, and as Ms. Jacoby testified in her deposition, quite shockingly, PNCIC is agnostic to what the ultimate outcome of the project is. PNCIC does not care. Those were her words. They do not care whether or not the project is profitable at the end. They're not an investor that sits around, that it puts money in and then awaits the outcome of the profitability of the project and then taking an investment back, taking the return on their investment back. Counsel is absolutely wrong when he represented that to you. That is not what PNCIC is doing. Ms. Jacoby made it clear. PNCIC only cares about getting in return for its service the rights to those federal historic tax credits. Those same federal historic tax credits that were used to obtain from the Parks Department an additional $45 million, and then that $45 million was paid to Mr. Moyetti's construction company, TriArc, to perpetrate this fraud. But their services, PNCIC was primarily engaged in the sale of those services. PNCIC was engaged in conduct that I described that is in their capacity as the provider of those services. That's what they do. And you'll see in the exhibits to Ms. Jacoby's deposition, taken from their website and from their own operating agreement, that's what they do. And the commercial transactions. Commercial transactions that are involved here are the increase in the budget, the obtaining of additional federal historic tax credits, the sale of the TIF, all of which PNCIC approved. And that conduct occurred in the course of those commercial transactions, which is an element of the commercial speech exemption. And then the intended audience is the last commercial speech exemption element, and that is who is the conduct directed to, and it just needs to be directed to someone who is typically their customer in the rendition of that type of service, in the provision of real estate investment and asset management services.
Thank you.
May it please the court. PNCIC is not a bank. It is not a subsidiary of PNC Bank. For regulatory reasons, that would actually not be permissible. But I can tell you what PNCIC is. In response to Mr. Ziegler's question, what is the business of PNCIC? Ms. Jacoby responded, PNCIC is an investor in a variety of tax credits, including historic tax credits. And that's at Clerk's Record, Volume 6, page 4056, where Ms. Jacoby testifies that. And it is, in fact, PNCIC's communications concerning that investment, the Statler Hotel Project, and the public financing for the Statler Hotel Project, and the part that PNCIC got from that being the federal historic tax credits that are the gravamen and are at issue in the Seventh Amendment petition. As stated, the difference between this case and Crestview, which this court is definitely an opinion of this court, discussing conduct versus communication, action versus communication, in that case, the court was very specific. That petition had no allegations of communications. Here, the Seventh Amendment petition is replete with such allegations, and it's very clear that it's complaining about PNCIC's phone calls, PNC's discussions, PNCIC's emails. These are all specific things alleged in the Seventh Amendment petition. In fact, as to the discussion about fraudulent misrep without a statement, that's the one place, the only place, I think, frankly, that the Seventh Amendment petition is clear is it says that PNC made misrepresentations in the operating agreement for the master tenant. One problem, none of Mr. Zaccanelli's clients is a member in that entity. The only members in that entity are PNCIC, which does own a 99% interest. It's where the equity capital came from. I think that's clear. And the manager. But the operating agreement is also very clear that the manager alone has the right to manage and control the day-to-day operations of the business.
Did PNCIC appoint FIAMA as the omnibus property manager?
That is not true, Your Honor. That is incorrect. The manager, acting on behalf of the master tenant, the management contract is between the master tenant and FIAMA Management Group, LLC. But PNCIC did not demand, direct, or appoint FIAMA Management Group is the omnibus property manager. That's in the record. That's in Ms. Jacoby's depositions. It's in her declarations, and it is cited to the trial court, and it was cited to this court. PNCIC, it's also uncontroverted that PNCIC had no information on the fact that the FIAMA Management Group was being terminated until after it had occurred. Wasn't asked to consent before it happened. It wasn't told it was about to happen. Its consent wasn't actually required for it to take place under the terms of the operating agreement. It was a for-cause termination. Whether the termination was valid or not is neither here nor there. It occurred before PNCIC ever knew about it. And it was the manager that terminated FIAMA Management Group in response to a dispute between Merdad Mughetti and Mr. Zaccanelli. On the issue of whether PNCIC rendered services, I want to return briefly to the investment issue. This court should not hold that any time an equity investment is made that someone is rendering a service. That would be a very broad, very, and frankly, incorrect ruling for the reasons that I stated earlier. Clearly, when I invest in Microsoft on the stock market, I'm not providing a service to Microsoft. PNCIC was not doing, just because it was a private investment, PNCIC was not doing anything different here. And in fact, when it receives those federal tax credits, the quote-unquote product is not coming from PNCIC. Though in their analogy, the product being the tax credits, those are coming from the developer and the Statler project. His client was not entitled to rely on the operating agreement. It was not an agreement with his client. And so even those, his fraud claim fails on that basis, for example. But even then, that quote-unquote misrep that's supposedly in the operating agreement, that qualifies as a communication under the extremely broad definition of communication, which encompasses any form or medium of expression as defined in the TCPA. I think that's everything, Your Honors, unless you have any further questions.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Gentlemen, we appreciate your argument here today. Your case has now been submitted, and you are free to go about your business.